It's time for Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 3 years has shared with us her decades research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative and judicial processes in America. And now, here's Mae.
Good afternoon. This is Mae Brussel, Carmel, California, Dialogue Conspiracy number 199. It'll be 200 next week, June 2nd, 1975. A few local announcements before we get started on the national news. I will be speaking at the University of California at Santa Cruz tomorrow. For those of you in this area, Santa Cruz and Los Gatos, Los Aptos, Salinas, Watsonville, I don't speak up there very often. This is the first lecture of the college year that I will be in the Santa Cruz area. It'll be 8 p.m. June the 3rd at Merrill Hall. And this is the end of the school year then until September. And I'll be at Cabrillo in September. And I received a call from Omaha, Nebraska in September. I'll be back there. But this will be the last college lecture for this particular season. 8 p.m. June 3rd at Merrill Hall. That's tomorrow night. And University of Santa Cruz, California. Monterey Peninsula College is having a movie of executive action at the Music Hall. That's this Friday night, June 6th at 8 p.m. And I'll be speaking before the showing of executive action like I did in Carmel when it was shown here a few years ago. In that movie, you'll see the example of the use of a second Oswald, a person who makes himself conspicuous in the Dallas-Fort Worth area prior to the assassination of John Kennedy at a car agency and various places who was not, in fact, Lee Harvey Oswald. You'll see a model of a dummy on a train pulled by a cart and gentlemen practicing a crossfire from three directions. This actually took place. There was training. The training took place for the assassination of John Kennedy. Some of the training took place at Fort Bragg in North Carolina. It was the 2-501st headquarters. The contact actually was made in February 1963 and in October 1963, and the gentleman who gave me this information alleges that E. Howard Hunt was the contact man in a New Mexican restaurant at Fort Bragg. Whether or not that's true would have to be tested under sworn testimony and maybe lie detector tests and so forth, but this gentleman has been in correspondence with various researchers, and he was one of a team of three that was supposed to kill a foreign dignitary, which turned out to be John Kennedy. The operation was called Operation Thereon, and he was pulled out, as I say, of the team. He was also one of three teams to kill General Walker, not kill, to shoot General Walker in the Dallas-Fort Worth area in April prior to the assassination. There was no intent to kill him, but to shoot him and then help create the motive for Lee Harvey Oswald wanting to kill John Kennedy. He would shoot the far right, which would be General Walker from the Byrd Society, and then shoot Kennedy, which is considered far left for Dallas, not to a lot of other people, but for Dallas. And then they would say he had no motive. He just shot from one end to the other, and that's what the Warren Report concluded. There were three assassination teams we've talked about. One was in Miami, one was in Chicago, and the other was in Dallas. So this movie pretty well depicts exactly the way the practicing of killing the president took place. And at that movie, I will read the letters from this gentleman, a few letters, and give you specific information that we can write to Congress about and see if they will go ahead and investigate it. That's Friday night at MPC, June the 6th, is Friday night at 8 o'clock at the Music Hall. I'm just briefly going to mention Gerald Ford today. There's pictures of him falling off the airplane in Salzburg, Austria. The front title says, "A football knee caves in on Ford." He stumbled once on his hands and feet and fell. This was Sunday off of Air Force One, and then two more times after meeting Egyptian President Sadat. The third time, Sadat kept him from falling 20 steps down a carpeted stairway. We better be careful. I'm not very conspiratorially minded, as you know, but it was just a year ago that Richard Nixon stumbled down the same Air Force One at the same airport. It was in Salzburg when he was flying to Egypt, and he also missed a step when he met President Anwar Sadat and stumbled forward, and later Richard Nixon, who never was ill, who never complained of illness, was diagnosed as having phlebitis. And you know, it was Richard Nixon who said, if I go into the hospital, I'll be killed. And it was right after that that he was sent home to Washington, D.C., where a group from Fort Devens came down to the White House. I've mentioned this before. The team from Fort Devens were from Psychological Warfare Unit. This is from the New York Times, March the 3rd, 1974. And this team of eight members of a special psychological warfare unit from Fort Devens arrived in Washington, D.C., and took over in the White House outside the Oval Room. Richard Nixon went into the hospital. Then Alexander Butterfield revealed that Nixon's White House had been taped, and that was what began the removal of Richard Nixon from the office of the President of the United States. So we can watch Mr. Ford tumble around and down in a position we haven't seen other presidents outside of Richard Nixon, and watch the news, and let's see how bad his football knee becomes, and if that too becomes a phlebitis. I'm sure the psychological group won't have to move in because they got to him a long time ago, 11 years ago, when he was put on the Warren Commission to investigate the killing of John Kennedy. Every week I put off, this is the second week I've put off a continuous series, which I promise that I want to start next week, on Gerald Ford's book. It's called The Portrait of the Assassin. I do want to take Dialogue Conspiracy for a few weeks, maybe hopefully 8 or 10, and go into chapter by chapter and sections of this book that the President of the United States wrote when he was a member of the House of Representatives and the Navy member of Navy Intelligence. MGM is going to be doing a movie, a production for CBS that'll come out in the fall. And so for the summer months, I want to go into this piece of fiction on the deranged Oswald that Gerald Ford wrote, so that people in this country who listen to this show and who take tapes can hopefully write to CBS and MGM and Congress and let them know what kind of a movie they're making and who was behind it and what kind of lies are being put out for mass America. It's interesting that in the heat of Watergate in the summer of 73, one of the top conspirators by the name of Ken Reitz, R-E-I-T-Z, a member of the secret team, moved out to MGM. Now that may be a coincidence, and it may not be a coincidence. Also, Hank Haldeman, the son of H.R. Haldeman, was sent to MGM for a summer job. But Ken Reitz was member of a super, super secret team whose funding was connected to Maryland money. He was 31 years old, and he was the head of Nixon's youth campaign. But he kept a bank account in Maryland, a special bank account under the direction of Hugh Sloan from the Committee to Reelect the President in Washington. And this bank account involved Henry Buchanan, the brother of Patrick Buchanan, the White House speechwriter. And the office was in a Bethesda, Maryland bank away from the other organizations. The excuse was that there were jealousies within the organizations. Maurice Stan knew of the bank account and kept it quiet during the entire Watergate investigation. The Washington Post, April 26, 1973, in an article by Lou Cannon, described Ken Reitz's operation in Maryland as being many little Watergates. Now, what was that secret money separated from the Committee to Reelect the President or Mr. Haldeman's secret $400,000 in his desk? Reitz worked with radical groups. He was spying on radical groups. He had a friend of his, George Gorton, he worked with, who at the end of the Watergate exposures or during them was considered too hot for the State Department. He was supposed to be there, but they moved him to the Department of Interior, and now he's with the Bicentennial Commission. And the question of Maryland money is important because in Maryland they hushed up the $25,000 that went to Congressman William Mills just before he died, and this probe was called off and should have been gone into. And George Wallace was shot in Maryland, and a lot of mysterious money was floating around Maryland. And we know about the escape plans of Arthur Brammer and the way the police cooperated and the FBI cooperated in the lone assassin, crazy man Arthur Brammer, when he actually was very well funded. So Mr. Reitz, who was considered part of the super secret team, is out at MGM, and I think it'd be interesting to know if he is backing up Gerald Ford's movie. MGM is producing this 4-hour movie that I'll be going in to the book, The Portrait of the Assassin, because Oswald was not deranged and he was not the assassin. And the President of the United States sits there and uses the major media to continue to brainwash us and rewrite history. And if you read your papers every day, there's a clash now of trying to write history, rewrite history, and the truth, the forces of truth opposing each other. So this will be coming out all summer long and continuously for the next 10 years. But I will get to that, hopefully, depending how the news breaks next week. I promise we'll get to Gerald Ford's book. I'm 2 weeks late on it already. I got a notice today in New York City, June the 7th, from 1 to 5 and from 7:30 to 11 at the Washington Square Church. There's going to be a movie of slides, a presentation by Robert Groden and Richard Sprague. It's the group called the Assassination Information Committee sponsors the politics of assassination. There's a picture of a rifle. Here it says a visual teach-in on the murder of JFK. I think that it tells you something about this country that various researchers have pooled their energy and resources together for from 11 years up to the present day. New people are joining us all the time. And the Congress of the United States is about to take summer sojourn. They have committees set up in the House of Representatives and the Senate. The Rockefeller Committee is breaking up. And everywhere the news is assassinations and conspiracies. And private groups have to have evenings and conferences on the politics of assassination, and you get a visual teach-in how the President of the United States was murdered, and yet the Attorney General, Mr. Levy, sits back there, and Rockefeller, the Vice President, they coordinate with President Gerald Ford, who was on the Warren Commission. There is something gross, obscene, highly illegal in this continuous cover-up that these forces allow private people to be doing the work that they should be doing, and I wish that all of them were pulled out and impeached for covering up and covering up for 11 years as the news splashes. A perfect example of private investigators working and news splashing everywhere is an issue of the National Tatler I received today. Those of you who don't receive it from newsstands, if you don't live in big cities where they have it, you should subscribe to the Tatler. They are dedicated to finding out the truth of who killed John Kennedy. They continuously have information on Robert Kennedy and John Kennedy, and they're using very reliable sources. The address is 2717 North Pulaski Road, Chicago 60699. Now, the newest issue today, the cover says, Blockbuster Investigation, Oswald was a government agent. The cover also says, New Evidence, Crossfire Killed Kennedy in Dallas. And then they discuss the various articles. The Mafia Man Who Was Caught, Let Go and Never Question at Dealey Plaza. The Warren Commission Covered Up Links with Intelligence Agencies. The JFK Investigation, The Watergate, The CIA Spying Probe have the same cast. Another section, Oswald Was Everywhere, How People Were Impersonating Lee Harvey Oswald. And a section, Louisiana Private Eye, Who Saved the Vice President's Life and Was Killed Probing JFK. Now, 2 years ago, an anniversary issue of the Tatler, 10 years after Kennedy's death, they had an issue on John Kennedy, which was excellent. It was 50 cents. They have a whole insert on Robert Kennedy's assassination with good information. That's 50 cents. So if you want these three issues, write for the old one on John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and this current one, and send $1.50, or send money for a subscription plus the $1.50. And I can't go into all these different subjects that are in this issue today. I have them in front of me, the titles I read there, pictures of Gerald Ford and Senator Richard Russell. And it goes into Frenchie, one of the men described as the tramp who was photographed or sketched at the scene that Martin Luther King was killed. And the same man is photographed at Dealey Plaza being taken away. It shows him also in the front of the trademark where Lee Harvey Oswald is handing out pamphlets. There's an article about George Wallace having another close call, and I believe he could have one. And it says, did congressional call to reopen JFK probe bring the assassins back? It goes into the death threat on Representative Henry Gonzalez because he put before the House that this should be opened up. But there's excellent material on the Mafia, and evidence shows the Mafia was behind the shooting of John Kennedy, working with the FBI and the CIA. Then it has Kennedy's intimates want new investigation links to the intelligence agencies. There's a section here on a cop in Dealey Plaza who saw Oswald drive away with a man in a Rambler. That was Sheriff Craig that I've talked about many times on the program. Sheriff Craig just died about 2 months ago by, in quotes, a suicide. This article, I guess, was written before he died. It said he lost his job, he was shot, bombed, and discredited. Now Sheriff Craig is dead. And as I say, it was supposed to be a suicide. Who would know? We won't know now. But Craig was the man who saw Oswald leave from the front of the book depository and alleged that he got in the station wagon that belonged to Michael and Ruth Payne from military intelligence. Then there's the ballistic evidence on the magic bullet, 399, that has been covered quite a great deal. And Marguerite Oswald, again, is surfacing because her son was an agent of the United States government, and she said it November 22nd, 1963, and she's correct about it, and history will prove that she was correct. The John Mulder of Tatler has a section from the Bay of Pigs to JFK's death. I take pride in publishing in The Realist the first story from Dallas to Watergate and mentioning various people that were involved in this whole operation that were involved in the killing of Kennedy and from the Bay of Pigs that were involved June 17th. It'll be an anniversary of the Watergate just 3 years ago. This article covers Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, John Connally, Leon Jaworski, Fred Karth, Arlene Specter, J. Lee Rankin, Gordon Novell, Frank Sturgis, E. Howard Hunt, and David Bellin, now the chief investigator for the Rockefeller Committee that's folding camp. And there's a lot of important information. Also, an article about Joe Cooper, who was murdered because he was investigating the links of John Kennedy's assassination to Baton Rouge. I think he had an important link there, and since he was killed, I've gotten more information about what was happening down in Baton Rouge and why it was important to stop that investigation at the time. There's a section here on Garrison is vindicated. Clay Shaw and David Ferry were working for the CIA. Here is Marguerite Oswald vindicated. Jim Garrison is vindicated. Many people dead like Clay Shaw and David Ferry, Jack Ruby, Lee Harvey Oswald, Sheriff Roger Craig. And then they have an article on the decoy game, Oswald Everywhere. And they have one employment record where he goes to the wine or lumber company and he says he has a car and Oswald didn't drive a car. This summer I'm going to be spending the next 2 months writing a book on the 39 Lee Harvey Oswalds that were in the 26 volumes published by the Warren Commission, the evidence that Oswald was at one place when another man using his name and handwriting was at another location in the country or out, at two different places. Each could be identified 39 times, and members of the Warren Commission, their staff, ignored this, even though they sold me the books for $86 with all the facts there. They ignored it, and then they go into the CIA links of many people, of Lee Harvey Oswald that he had in the area, George de Morenschild, the one I talk about so many times and I've done so much research on. This is a very important article I've just barely touched. I've just read the top pages. It says, mystery cartridge found at the murder scene that was picked up and ignored and given to TV newsmen. It was found in the curb and picked up in somebody's pocket that was never accounted for. Well, that is this week's National Tatler, and the conferences of conspiracies go on and the organizing goes on. And the Congress sit like a bunch of eunuchs, which they are, guarding the harem, which is nothing but, I guess, a group of dollars pouring in and out for defense contracts and money for more ammunition and weapons and police in the streets and SWAT teams, and that's all they know. Our police and weapons and ammunition, unemployment rising, and gas prices rising, and gas rationing soon. To take your mind off of these things such as conspiracies, I think that what we'll get, like we did at the Watergate crisis, is your gas rationing tickets, and then you will have diversions, and they'll say we have real problems of unemployment and gasoline shortage. We know there is no shortage of fuel at the present time, but we can have incidences in North Korea or South Korea and anything to divert, because the evidence is coming out and Congress is totally ignoring it, and therefore they must build up diversionary tactics for their next operation. And I imagine that's the only way they can think to handle it, because there's very few people out of the hundreds and hundreds back in Congress that are speaking up, maybe 35 so far, have agreed to open this up, and the evidence not only piles up, but it links up. You know, I have a conspiracy circle. I say there's 15 elements of every conspiracy, and they all fit together. And at a university courses last year, last summer, went into various angles of these 15 different circles, one of them being organized crime, the other the use of the FBI and CIA, the other local police department. Well, if you read your news now, the way the police take tramps off and don't arrest them or pick them up, or the news people pick up bullets or shells off the street and put them in their pocket, and the CIA uses organized crime, you can see how my conclusions about these conspiracies fit together when you read the current news and every element of our society is used. And I want to go into some of that also with you today in regards to various articles on assassinations and conspiracies. I came into the studio knowing we had 45 minutes to share on the air, and I brought 45 articles, and each one we could talk about for the whole program. It's difficult and frustrating not to analyze each one of these with you in lieu of your patience the last 4 years, some of you, of listening to various conspiracies explained on the air, and then to see them coming forth and being admitted from the highest offices in the land at the present time. But I know when you keep reading your newspapers now, you look back and can relate some of these programs to those events that are taking place in your headlines today. I did want to mention an article that was in the New York Times that caused a lot of confusion last December, as far back as December. It was when the first story broke of Seymour Hersh about the illegal CIA gathering of hundreds, thousands of people in the United States, 10,000 American citizens, that set off the Rockefeller Committee going into business. And at the time that article broke, Mr. Angleton, A-N-G-L-E-T-O-N, had a strange remark, a quotation in the New York Times. He quickly left the CIA after working there for many, many years, and he had a very interesting quotation in there that a lot of people didn't understand, and it had to do with John Kennedy. He said, in quotes, "A mansion has many rooms, and there were many things going on during the period of the bombings, and I'm not privy to who struck John." And a lot of people didn't understand just what he meant, but there was some coded reference in there. And in the same article, they referred to Mr. Angleton because he was identified by British counterspy Kim Philby in a book called My Silent War that was published in 1968 before Kilby defected to the Soviet Union. Well, I thought of this remark in December that Angleton had made because when I received the letter of William Colby of the Central Intelligence Agency to Senator Howard Baker, dated 28th of June, 1974. I read on the air a lot of the Colby report in the last 4 or 5 weeks. I've been reading you sections of it. But I also read on the air a sentence here that Mr. Colby made in June, which makes sense. In December, Mr. Angleton talked about that room of John and the many mansions. And in this, Mr. Colby said in June to Senator Howard Baker, that I'm giving you this information about the CIA's involvement in the Watergate and in Dr. Fielding's office and in the subsequent cover-ups. And what he said was that if it appears that you think the CIA was involved in these matters, if your interpretation is that the CIA was involved in these matters, I may feel it necessary to take an appropriate public position to assure that the conclusions from my investigation and the results from other investigations are also known. Now, I read that on the air before, but I think it was important because this week I looked up what Mr. Philby said about Mr. Angleton, because in June, Mr. Colby is saying, the head of our CIA, that if you expose the CIA as being part of the Watergate or part of the cover-up or the Dr. Fielding entry, I'll let other investigations become known. And then James Angleton in December, 4 months later, starts talking about who struck John, that there are many mansions. And we know the CIA works on a need-to-know basis. So even though he wasn't privy, he is suggesting that there were many rooms there and there was something about who struck John that he wasn't going to talk about, but he did bring up the name, and the name is important to people talking about the assassination of John Kennedy at this time, particularly with Gerald Ford president, and he's on the Warren Commission. So I got out my book by Kim Philby, My Silent War, and I thought it was very interesting because the references to Angleton were important and do, in fact, lead back to the John Kennedy assassination. On page 190 and 191 and 192, what Mr. Philby was saying, Philby was head of British intelligence who defected to the Soviet Union and turned out to be a Russian spy. What he said about Angleton was this, in quotes, "Angleton did not have many fears about Germany or Nazi Germany. That country that concerned him chiefly as the base of operations, it was safe because he was working against the Soviet Union, the socialist states of Eastern Europe. The CIA lost no time in taking over the anti-Soviet section of the German Abwehr under von Galen." That's Reinhard Galen, chief of Eastern Division, head of Hitler's Nazi intelligence, informed our CIA. And he said they took over many of Harvey's lobsters, went to provoke Angleton into defending with chapter after verse the past record and current activities of the von Galen organization, that Angleton had fear of the Soviet Union, and that he went over and over and defended. He was the defender, chapter and verse, of the chief of Nazi intelligence, von Galen. And we had many skirmishes, he said, over the various Russian emigre organizations, of which more later in this chapter. There was the People's Labor Alliance. There were the Ukrainian fascists of Stephen Bandera, the darlings of the British. And both the CIA and SIS were up to their ears in emigre politics, hoping to use the more promising groups for purposes analogous to those for which we had used Jordania. Now, this is very important. I hope it isn't too complicated to you, because Mr. Angleton and the CIA and Alan Dulles brought over the Russian emigre organization, and they infiltrated many cities and straits and universities. There's still many of them in our Monterey Peninsula, the language school, and in this area, the white Russian community that were brought over by Reinhard Galen's Nazi organization. But this is the group that settled those 30 persons in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that were friends of Lee and Marina Oswald, such as George von Morenschild, who changed his name to George de Morenschild. And I could see where Mr. Angleton was talking about privy to many houses and mansions and who struck John, because the most important part of the Kennedy assassination, in my mind, after I realized it was a conspiracy and the weapon ballistics were off and so forth, was the manipulation of Oswald as a person, the psychology of creating the deranged Oswald. And these various agents brought over from the Nazi organizations of von Galen, that were brought here by Mr. Angleton, who just resigned from the CIA, and Alan Dulles, and moved to the Dallas-Fort Worth area, were the key and are the key to that fictitious Oswald that Gerald Ford writes about. They created the deranged Oswald from their witness testimony that had no basis in fact. And this is important to know, because today the CBS or NBC, one of the major news media, was talking about the Cuban community, the anti-Castro Cuban community, coming in and assisting the Vietnamese from the Phoenix program down in Pendleton, California, and giving them lectures. And what we have done in this country has brought people from countries that were overthrown by the communists, such as the Nazis bringing in the white Russian community in Florida, the organized crime, the gambling tables bringing in people like Bernard Barker, who kept the gaming tables for crime for Batista, which is $100 million, a business in the United States for gangland, and using them to get Castro out. People like Hunt, Sturgis, and Barker can be used in political assassinations or conspiracies like Watergate or John Kennedy, or even the Martin Luther King. They can be used for various conspiracies because they're told that the person they're imposing is a communist. And now we have the Vietnamese, again, in our local community here and all over this country, California, various pockets, and the Cubans can train them so that this country will have a lot of voices on radio, letters to the editor, a lot of bombing. The Cuban community has been behind bombing in Los Angeles, the Socialist Workers Party, the Rosenberg rally, where the sons of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg spoke. And we're going to see a lot of violence in America. And the emigre groups that were brought here will have their citizenship dangled on a string, and they will perform, and they will be authorities. about communism being victims of communism. And actually, each one of these people only became a victim of communism at the end of the line. They were part and parcel of oppression of the Tsar or Batista or Thieu in Vietnam and the tiger cages they put in. They were fleeing from their own fascism. They were war criminals in their own country. They would be killed and tried in their own country. It wasn't the communism that they were so much afraid of, as they represented pure greed and sadism and torture, and they were brought into this country. So the references to Angleton, who quickly resigned when he was exposed of having files on 10,000 Americans in the CIA, those references fit very good into his love of Reinhard Gehlen and Nazi intelligence, or his importation with Alan Dulles into America of Russian emigres, who by no coincidence at all are written up in articles like The Tatler or in books like George de Morenschild, von Morenschild, who befriends Lee and Marina Oswald in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and then later sets Oswald up as being the deranged person, which he actually wasn't. The emigre community is working overtime and will continue to work. We've brought them into this country since World War II, and we'll reap the rewards of that very shortly. The news this week, getting into some of these articles, I can just barely touch them, as I say. The gist of it is that the CIA investigation of the Rockefeller Committee began when Seymour Hersh revealed the illegal operations of the CIA, and now they're ready to close shop. They'll have a report June the 6th, which will be fairly obnoxious and will not cover anything that's going on in this country that's important domestically. The mandate was to look into domestic CIA operations, which are illegal, but they all of a sudden latched on with Senator Church to a goodie, which is the attempted assassination of Castro. And so the headline in the news keep going over and over about Trujillo or Castro. They'll give one body up, say Trujillo, and the Castro assassination attempt never took place, so it isn't even worth investigation, the kind that they're holding on to. And they're not going into the people they really killed, but they go every day, the headline is over and over again about the attempt on Castro. William Colby has said to the Church Committee he's promised there'll be no more murders. Well, at the same time, he hasn't admitted they did any. They're not going to do any more. Congress says they can't do any more murders, but they won't come up and say which ones they've done. But books fill the library shelves, and articles come with a list of bloody murders. And in my research, I would like to lay about 300 or 400 at their feet and accuse these agencies of being responsible for these murders. And I'm not thinking just of John Kennedy 300 times. I'm thinking of plenty of murders that are taking place as a result of these operations. Mr. Colby has said there'll be no more murders, but he hasn't promised you no more kidnappings and no more bombings. And that's what we're going into and started in with the Zodiac killings in San Francisco and the Zebra killings and acts of violence around the country done by persons who've been in the military or in mental hospitals that are creating terror in the streets of America. So while Colby is limited to political assassinations, Congress can drag its feet and isn't even on to the kidnappings and the street bombings that have been taking place. They will, as I say, turn their attention to the assassination attempt on Castro, which was planned in the Eisenhower years, and now they're trying to push it into the John Kennedy years, that John Kennedy planned the assassination of Castro, when the evidence and documentation actually exists that it was done in the Eisenhower years, and there's no written document except retired Colonel Lansdale's word that John Kennedy planned the killing of Castro. I'll go into that in a moment, because that made the headlines this week out of great concern for keeping the history straight. Mr. Lansdale suddenly surfaced, and he's retired, with this great story that maybe he should tell the truth, that the killing of Castro was planned by John Kennedy. Now, how many would believe this team, the secret team, Major General Lansdale? He was known in a book and movie as the Ugly American. I believe he still is. And he surfaced this last Friday that it was orders of John Kennedy to kill Castro. It's interesting because the other evidence was in that the Eisenhower administration had already talked about this. The evidence from Mr. Lansdale, Major General Lansdale, has no documentation. He says that he worked through an intermediary with John Kennedy, but he can't produce the intermediary. He admits that Robert Kennedy was not present, and he has no evidence of the minutes of the meetings. There's nothing in the minutes of the meetings of the special group to indicate that these orders went out. But there's nothing like whipping a dead man, a dead horse. You remember at the time of the Watergate when Howard Hunt was arrested, and on his desk, and I keep bringing it up, was the razor blade and the typewriter, and they were forging that he was ordered the murder of DM, and that was already leaked to Time magazine. You would think that this team would be embarrassed or that the Kennedys would speak up. Time magazine has a picture this week of the Kennedy connection of Robert and Jack, and that they possibly were behind the murder of Castro. What these accounts don't tell you, and which can be carefully documented, is that Mr. Smathers, Senator Smathers from Florida, had a very violent fight with John Kennedy. He actually broke a plate because Smathers insisted that Kennedy go ahead and kill Castro, and Kennedy refused. He said, "I won't have anything to do with political assassinations." Smathers works with B.B. Rebozo and Richard Nixon in Florida. He's strangely silent now as all this news breaks on the story, but in my files of Kennedy in the past 11 years, I can document this, look it up, this confrontation that took place where Kennedy absolutely refused to have anything to do with the murder of Castro. But Mr. Smathers doesn't speak up, and Ted Kennedy doesn't speak up, and I hope they do. I doubt if they will. I don't know if they have the courage. And why would we believe the secret team, as I say? Why would we believe a word they say when they forge documents? And we know that anything in their hands is forged, but Lansdell can't even come out with a forged document. He comes up with a third person, an intermediary who doesn't exist or doesn't exist to produce, to say, yes, he told me that, and yet the two Kennedy brothers are being charged with this, which wasn't what the Church Committee was supposed to investigate or the Rockefeller Committee were supposed to investigate. There's another article in the paper this week by George Lardner in the Washington Post. The title of the article is "The Church Probers Find Gaps in the CIA Records." Well, we know that they found gaps in the Watergate records. We know that Richard Helms destroyed evidence after he was told by Senator Majority Leader Mansfield to hold on to the Watergate-related evidence, and he was going to Iran to work for the Shah of Iran. We know that he purposely destroyed evidence and should be brought home, but he's brought home for questioning, and he's sent back with full regalia. But beneath this article was an interesting statement that didn't get the headlines. It said, asked about rumors and doubts surrounding the assassination of President Kennedy, Church said the committee will confine itself to the degree of cooperation the CIA and the FBI gave the Warren Commission, and to the question of whether either withheld important information. Now, the mandate of the Church Committee to probe CIA domestic operations did not limit their investigation. The Senate Select Committee limited what they investigated. The Warren Commission limited what it investigated. The Rockefeller Committee was a farce, but now they have decided that they will confine their investigation to the degree of cooperation the CIA and the FBI gave the Warren Commission. Well, documents of Harold Weisberg's from the National Archives and papers published already in many books and articles show that the CIA and FBI did total investigation of the killing of President John Kennedy and the shooting of Lee Harvey Oswald and the killing of Officer J.D. Tippit. And that, remember the Warren Commission, Alan Dulles from the CIA admitted that he would lie if there was evidence that Oswald was from the FBI and CIA or both, that he would lie to the Warren Commission. So the question isn't how much the FBI or CIA gave to the Warren Commission. The question should be how much do the investigators who've done the work for 11 years put at the lap of the CIA and FBI, and why are these people still holding head of these committees or acting as President of the United States? Now, what this article went on to say is that if further investigation seems warranted, Church said the committee will say so in its final report. Now, that's a very interesting remark. The Senate Select Committee closed up when they found out that they were at the tip of the iceberg, that they were getting into CIA operations, and they recommended maybe some other investigation of the CIA. So the church committee will say if it is warranted to investigate further. It didn't say they will go further, but they will say if it's warranted. A friend from New York wanted me to go to Washington to testify by the church committee on the investigations of the FBI and CIA and the Warren Commission, but they want to limit their investigation to the degree of cooperation they gave the Warren Commission instead of the degree of exclusion. They cooperated on nothing. And then when they write their report, they will suggest whether or not to go in the John Kennedy assassination. Another series of articles have come out this week on J. Edgar Hoover was reported to be, this is a New York Times story, Hoover reported to be wary of CIA ties, that he was worried that the FBI, working with the CIA, would be involved in blackmail using mafia people like Mr. Giacano. The CIA had contracted mafia persons to help kill Castro and for other operations. And J. Edgar Hoover was afraid that by using members of the mafia, that the FBI would eventually be blackmailed. And this was true. Giacano, he said, could be in a position to blackmail the United States government. If he killed Castro, he could blackmail them later, and the mafia would be in the business of blackmailing the government, which it is in the business of doing now because it was involved in all these political assassinations. But this particular article in the New York Times was interesting because it said that the reason they wanted to use the mafia was to hide the Howard Hughes connections. That Hughes, actually, the Hughes Corporation, which I've said all along is CIA, there was no Hughes for the last 20 years, and certainly not during this time period of 67, 68. But the Hughes Corporation, through Robert Mayhew of the CIA and FBI, had contacted Mr. Rosselli and Mr. Giacano to kill Castro. And the New York Times article was honest enough to state that the reason they wanted to use the mafia was to hide the connections of the CIA and FBI, that they would do the murdering for them to hide the government connections. Now, the Oswald trip to Soviet Union was very convenient. They could say Oswald was a communist. He went to the Soviet Union to cover the high CIA connections of the 40 Committee, the National Security Council's orders to kill John Kennedy. This article by Nicholas Harrock from the New York Times, May 22, 1975, is a good article on the use of the mafia of the, in the CIA in order to hide the CIA links. But the FBI, it's interesting, shouldn't have been so cautious because J. Edgar Hoover has used the mafia and Lansky and the Sicilian connection at the waterfront since World War II. And the racetrack connection he has used all along for various operations. But the CIA is the killer team. Hoover used the mafia for many operations. I don't know how many. But the real orders that come from the White House, the National Security Council, that involve the FBI because they're in charge of the investigation, so they're therefore in charge of the cover-up. The FBI and the CIA have to work together. And Hoover was a little bit weary. There's a memo that says he was weary about using them because the mafia could blackmail the United States government. It's very difficult to blackmail the United States government when Richard Nixon or Gerald Ford represent the total efforts of the mafia and the CIA and drug traffic and espionage all rolled into one and keep covering each other up. There's another article in National Tatler the week before this other issue came out. Mark Lane spoke about on the West Coast. You may get it. It's called Nixon is tied to suspects in the Kennedy assassination and has his links to Jack Ruby. He was supposed to be a witness before the Un-American Activities Committee when Nixon interceded and protected him. Jack Rubenstein from Chicago was protected by Richard Nixon, known as Jack Rubenstein, as early as 1947. And a professor, a political scientist from U.S. Army Intelligence, wants to go to the House Judiciary with that information. Well, the time is up, and we barely touched a massive amount of material that's broken in the news this week, but you'll have to do some of your own homework and keep up with the news and read these articles. And hopefully next week we'll get into the Gerald Ford book, The Portrait of the Assassin, and do some analysis of it before CBS does their program in the fall. Take care of yourselves, and I'll see you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 10 years has been researching the facts behind political assassinations and conspiracies in this country. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KELRB FM in Carmel, California.